WLB at Revolution Radio.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
Tired of what the mainstream news tells you or how the politicians are trying to take away America's freedom? Ready for a change? Join the master of provocative insight, Dwight Lilly. He will take us
down a rabbit hole.
But no need to worry. He will lead us through the maze of half-lies and fake news to the light at the end of the tunnel. Knowledge is power, and ignorance is a ticket to slavery. Join Dwight as he tries to help bring knowledge to the public that will crack down on the ever-increasing dissent in the world today.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back here for another show here on the Friday edition of Down the Rabbit Hole. I want to remind the listeners that on Wednesdays, I'm in Studio A between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock for my show, Heaven's Reveal. And you know, check that out if you get a chance to. But before I get into the meat of the show, I want to remind the listeners that Revolution Radio is a listener-supported radio network. We depend upon you to help us pay the bills. So please, at freedomslips.com, our main mothership website, hit that donate button and give generously. You can also become a Patreon supporter. That's what I did. And the instructions there are on the front page of the website. You set up your account and establish how much you want to send and what the payment source is, and off it goes, and you never have to think about it. Once a month, a donation comes out. So anyway, that's what I got to say at the beginning of the show. I don't know about other parts of the world, but here in the United States, the absurdity of it is striking that I got to be talking about this right now in February of the year. But we're into the political season. Yes, we just had the election for the president and all of that rigmarole about 15 months ago. And we're right back at it again. We have it our biannual election, and then we'll be two more years. We'll be back choosing a president again, and it just never ceases here. It seems that the politicians are running for something and asking for money. Now, I have the unfortunate experience of running for public office in 2018, And it was a grueling experience, one I don't highly recommend, because you can enter into a political debate naively, in a sense. I don't believe I was naive, but I didn't realize how much the lawyers ran everything in this country until I got into the politics end of it and started doing radio shows. I noticed that the invisible hand that's talked about in physics in our everyday life is really the legal field, the lawyers. And there are thousands of them out there. And what I find interesting about this whole legalistic situation, we don't have a justice system in the United States, by the way. So don't, let's just throw that right out. When you hear the word justice or justices, it's not. It's a legalistic system. And he who's got the money can beat the system. And if you don't have the money, you don't beat the system. And even the highest on the pecking order will find this out if they decide to tangle with the government, because what the government will do is they will attach their income and their assets by either forfeiture of laws, or they'll just simply freeze the bank account, and the prosecutors will accuse a person of any manner of misdeeds where that backs and justifies freezing the person's account. And once the person has their account frozen, then they no longer on the even playing field with the prosecutors, and it's tough to win an acquittal if you don't have really good legal representation. The whole thing goes on. But on the other side of that point, the lawyers are the ones that are the politicians. Other than at the local level, local races, and maybe some state races, I know when you get into the congressional race, that but those people are lawyers that you're dealing with, that are our representatives, and they're dealing with lawyers in the executive branch. And, well, the president is a lawyer. Now, Donald Trump was not a lawyer, but he was graduated from, I think it was Penn University's business college there. I think he had an MBA, but I don't quote me on that. But other than that, Obama, lawyer, Bill Clinton, lawyer. You know, the list goes on and on of how many lawyers that we've had as president of the United States. But in addition to that, even if they weren't a lawyer, their lives were ran by lawyers. You know, they had their chief of staff and all of their different people around them that are lawyers, as is it is in Congress. If a person doesn't happen to be a lawyer, then they're surrounded by lawyers on their staff. Because, again, it's not a justice system, it's a legal system. And I don't believe for a second that this is how the founding fathers had devised our constitutional setup here to be this way. They believed that representatives, citizen representatives, ordinary farmers, and the local guy that made shoes, what do you mean, shoe cobbler, the guy that had his own blacksmith shop. Different people in the community could run for office and become the representative of the community, or in the case of the government, the federal government, and run for office, get elected, and they would be the ones determining the any laws that needed to be devised to keep the overall system that we had flowing, our capitalistic system, our enterprise system, keeping the, make sure roads were clear, making sure you didn't have a problem getting products from one of the states to the next state. But it wasn't as complicated. Now, you can't keep up with the laws, and it's all run by lawyers. Which brings me to this point, long-winded, I guess. A lawyer by the name of Michael Avenatti, he got tied up with a woman by the name of Stormy Stormy. You've probably heard this. And Michael Avenatti is a crooked lawyer. So that's the part of the equation, what I'm talking about, people running for office and the government and everything, is that it's full of crooked lawyers. Well, Richard Nixon, crook. He was a lawyer, you know. And so what we have here is Donald Trump. Now he denies it. Of course, Donald Trump denies everything. So I take some of his denials with a grain of salt. But Stormy Daniels was I think she was like a porn actress or something, and a prostitute of such. And she hooked up with Donald Trump. Even though Donald Trump was married to his wife, that doesn't make any difference because he was a philanderer and hung out with people like Jeffrey Epstein and the ilk of that, and Bill Clinton and that ilk. But anyway, there was an attempt to extort money from from Donald Trump, and he had this lawyer pay a bribe to this Stormy. And it just got really messy. If you want to look this up, you could do a Google search. I don't want to go into that case. But anyway, when it was all said and done, Stormy decided to write a book. You know, a tell-all book. And she wrote the book. She got a contract to write the book. And this attorney, Michael Avenatti, he was a California litigator, and it says here in this article I copied today, he says in 2018 earned stardom as President Trump's legal foil. He was convicted today of stealing funds from the adult film actress Stormy Daniels, the very same client I was just talking about. It says a Manhattan federal jury found Avenatti guilty of single count of wire fraud and aggravated identity theft in connection with his pocketing nearly $300,000 of Daniels' advance for her memoir book, Full Disclosure. And he now faces 22 years in prison. Now, juries began deliberating just a couple days ago. And there was some talk about the case not, you know, maybe being a hung jury because the panelist said, hey, we've got one juror that doesn't want to even debate the evidence. But I guess they got that ironed out. And Avenatti was found guilty. And his sentencing is scheduled for May the 24th. And he has to surrender to the U.S. Marshals in the Central District of California, where he also faces a retrial on charges that he swiped millions of dollars from several clients. So, okay. A lawyer is a fiduciary. That's, they're supposed to be somebody that you can entrust your money with. There's somebody that sets up trust accounts, and if there's funds coming to you, they could be settling a estate. They could be representing you in a legal situation, like in the case of Stormy Daniels, or representing you with a book, you know, a book publisher or whatever. And there's no reason that Stormy Daniels, regardless of her life choices and everything, shouldn't have been able to trust Michael Avenatti. But obviously she couldn't trust Michael Avenatti because he stole $300,000 from her. Now how he was stealing it, here's the way he comes out of the courtroom today. I'll get into how he stole it here in a minute. He comes out and he said that he was very disappointed that the jury found him guilty and that he awaits to, you know, take him on. Well, he had been, he wants to appeal this, but what is there to appeal? They had him dead to right with the evidence. But in addition to that, he had had court-appointed legal defense. So he was flat broke. He swindled all this money, and any money that he did have, the government obviously confiscated and took away from him. So he was reduced when this came to trial that he had to have a public defender. And I know locally here, if you talk to anybody, and I have been involved, I was falsely accused of felonies and went through the whole process of getting out from underneath it. And I know exactly what you go through. Yeah, it's a tough battle when you take it on the state. And anyway, he found this out himself because he had to have court-appointed attorneys, which meant that he basically was broke. They don't just give you a court-appointed attorney if you're going to pay for your legal fees. You know, and they'll tell you, hey, if you got a house, go sell your house. Take a mortgage against it. Sell your car. Do whatever you have to do. But if you can prove that you don't have the assets, then they do appoint you. But I started to say, if you want to go to jail or you want to lose a lawsuit, get a court-appointed attorney. Now, I'm not saying they're totally incompetent, but they're just generally public defenders are somebody that's fresh out of law school, or there's somebody that they just couldn't make it in their own practice. They couldn't even make it as a, you know, this is the bottom of the line criminal defense person is a court-appointed attorney. And because of budgets and everything, they end up with piles and piles of cases. So you're not the only case. They might have 150 cases going. You're just one. And they do everything to try to settle it, try to get, you know, and if they settle it and you rightfully were, you know, innocent, and they talk you into it, you're guilty. It's just all sorts of problems with it. But again, we don't have a justice system. We have a legal system. So this guy says in April of 2018, that's like almost 4 years ago, Stormy Daniels secured an $800,000 book contract to be paid in 4 installments. After the first payment, Avenatti forged Daniels' signature on a letter to her literary agent that directed all future payments to be wired to bank accounts he controlled. The evidence showed that he forged his name. And so Miss Daniels was about to embark on a fight against the President of the United States, the most powerful person on the planet, and Avenatti said during summations, I agreed to take that fight on, but I didn't agree to do it for free. While their attorney-client fee agreement stated Avenatti would receive a reasonable percentage of proceeds from the back book, an amount to be agreed upon later, prosecutors said he and Daniels never discussed what the percentage would be. And anyway, so the prosecutor said that he snatched her second payment of almost $150,000 and spent it on expenses for himself and his firm before repaying her part with a $250,000 loan from another attorney. And he used a cashier's check to pay Daniels and claimed that the funds came from the publisher. But Daniels' third $150,000 payment never arrived. And from the fall of 2018 to February 2019, the porn star repeatedly asked Avenatti for help in getting the publisher to pony up the funds, unaware that Avenatti had already received and spent them. And she was led on for months with alternating excuses. So anyway, this guy's a rat, and it shows you what type of a person oftentimes becomes a lawyer. We've got one right here in Nevada, in Las Vegas, a big article in the Las Vegas paper yesterday about this guy that just another rat, and they disbarred him. But they're full of, there's a lot of rats out there. And the law is, again, the rats are the ones that are writing our law. Now, I found this other situation when I was reading the internet today that ties in with law, but it's another interesting take. There's a guy by the name of Robert Hooper, And he used a forklift, and this happened over in Great Britain. He used a forklift to pick up a car, basically, and remove it from his land. And says, a farmer who wrecked a car parked on his land with a tractor has been cleared of criminal damage after he successfully used the 400-year-old legal principle that an Englishman's home is his castle. Now, we've heard this term. Hey, my home's my castle. There's the castle laws that you hear about, famously in Texas and other places, where your house is your castle, your property is your castle. And people that come onto your property can not only get shot and killed, and the homeowner can be held without any liability because they were trespassed, and the homeowner has absolute law at that property. It's a very interesting situation. But it says here, this Robert Hooper, 57, he became an internet sensation in June of last year when a video of him using the spikes of his telehandler, which is a forklift apparatus, to flip a 16,000-pound car, and it went viral on social media. The hill farmer from Upper Teesdale said he had been forced to take action after he came under attack from a strutting and agitated shirtless youth who had refused to move the car from his land. And says Mr. Hooper said he did not call police because he had been burglarized 8 times. And that sounds familiar. It sounds like the United States here. And found they were often slow to respond. Yep, that sounds like the United States too. He went on trial at Durham County Crown Court after being charged with dangerous driving and criminal damage. But he was acquitted of all charges after telling the jury, quote, an Englishman's home is his castle, and my castle starts at the front gate. Now, Michael Rawlinson, his barrister, that's a lawyer over there, told the court that the origins of the phrase could be traced back to 1604 when Sir Edward Coke was the Attorney General of England. This whole case is about an Englishman's home being his castle and his right to lawful self-defense of himself and his property, explained Mr. Rawlinson. In an early 17th century ruling known as the Semaines case, that's S-E-M-A-Y-N-E case, Sir Edward stated, the house of everyone is to him as his castle and fortress, as well as for defense against injury and violence, as for his repose. If thieves come to a man's house to rob him or murder, and the owner or his servants kill any of the thieves in defense of himself and his house, it is no felony and he shall lose nothing. Now, the case against Mr. Hooper also became a town versus county debate, with the farmer and his neighbors rallying against people who had used their isolated rural community as a playground during lockdown. Anyway, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but I find this very interesting that that oftentimes we don't know where the origin of a particular law is or how it came into the vernacular here in the United States, which we were a colony of England there for, well, a few hundred years after the English first settled here on the east coast of the United States, and then we broke away with our revolution. But many of the laws that we go by here in the United States were actually from old English law, and we obviously have adopted them in many cases. But I don't know about you out there, but I kind of agree with this. Well, I'm not out for wholesale killing people that come onto your property, because, I mean, if you have to have your gate open, you can have some. Like when I moved here, my neighbor across the street's mother lived with him, and she was in late 70s, and she was had dementia, and she would wander under our property, and she scared the dickens out of me. I was working in my garage one time. this one specifically comes to my mind, and all of a sudden somebody's talking directly behind me, like a foot behind me. I literally almost went through the ceiling of the garage, and I turned around. Well, this nice little old lady was standing there, and she was a nice lady, but, you know, I had to kind of direct her back across the street, and I did this a number of times. I didn't take any offense to it. I never called the cops or anything like that because, I mean, and the neighbor was, you know, I understood he was taking single guy and he was taking care of his mom, and she eventually passed away after the first couple of years that I met her. I never did have a regular conversation with her because she was always sort of out of it. And she would do stuff like wander around and open up your mailbox and things like that. Now, I wouldn't have taken a gun and shot this woman. But in the case of in the middle of the night and you're at home and you don't have cameras set up, you shouldn't have, well, one thing, you shouldn't have to have cameras set up on your property. I mean, we shouldn't have to be living in a fortress, but that's the way society is right now. Well, if people are out there causing problems with you and threatening you, like in this guy's case, and the story as it went on, the thug came up to him, the punk that wouldn't move his car, actually punched the landowner in the jaw. And so it ended up that the landowner got his equipment, moved the car, and dumped it outside the gate. And anyway, what a world we live in. But I'll be back here after the break and go further down the rabbit hole with some other stories here. But this is getting absurd, the whole legalistic situation. And, you know, we have to defend ourselves against our neighbors. And, oh, my God. I don't know where it's going to end. But it's not going to probably end well. And later I'll be talking about a billionaire's opinion that we're going to end up with a civil war in this country the way things are going, because of just the disputes and the anger and everything. So we'll be right back.
Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Don't This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Broadcasting live from the peak of Mount Warning, the most easterly point of Australia, tune in to the Free Manatee Radio Show with your host, Spread Love, every Monday, 6 a.m. EST. On the show each week, we discuss realistic solutions to help you observe rather than take part in the globalist agenda. We will dig into the past to find solutions for the future. We will discuss the wisdom of Ayurveda, the science of life, for techniques for understanding and achieving personal health and longevity. Please join us every Monday on Studio A, 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Free Manatee Radio broadcast with your host, Spread Love. On Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution Radio!
Alright, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back here. And again, I want to remind the listeners that please donate to the cause here by hitting the donate button there at Revolution Radio's mothership at freedomslips.com. Okay, tying in with what I've been talking about the first half hour about government, you know, lawyers, and just the whole mess that we have in our country. It's ran by our country, and I believe it's the same around the world. We're run by lawyers, the legal field. You and I are not playing on an even field here because we're just out there working and paying taxes and trying to obey this never-ending flood of laws that these people pass, and we're not lawyers. We don't even understand half the time what they're talking about. When they come out with a piece of legislation, and you find out it's over 1,000 pages long, and then they have the audacity to vote for it hours after its final cut, as you'd say, comes out, without somebody looking over it and making sure everything's the way it's supposed to be. This is not the way to run a country not the way to run a dog pound. But there's a letter that was in the paper today that kind of set me off on this. And it says, here's the way it goes. It says, this is a letter to the editor. On the letter to the editorial pages of the newspaper, the local newspaper here, it says, our leaders have not learned history's lessons in conflict and diplomacy. They have misused our stature and strength as a nation, and they have squandered our military forces in misguided engagements. The goal for these politicians has been, for the most part, self-aggrandizement in the form of control on keeping themselves and their party, political party, in power, and doing all that is possible to discredit the opposition. Even when good ideas come from the outside their own ranks, they emphasize the trivial, ignore the relevant, and pander to any group of the moment or votes. They consider the citizens of this nation to be ignorant or unintelligent and offer pablum in their rhetoric in the media and on their websites, and worthless form letters in any response to a concerned constituent. If I hear one more time the worn-out mantra that something is good for all Americans, I think I will again, to put it politely, regurgitate. The citizens of this nation are fed up and the current activism and intense interest in politics are the response to poor leadership. Many who are also afraid that we are lost are past, many are also afraid that we are past the point where this nation can recover during their lifetimes, if ever. The responsible people of this country want responsible, considered, and coordinated action from those we elect and the courage to do what is right. In this money-fueled circus of another election year, we have received inane political ads, most with little substance. I am led to believe that we should vote for the candidate with the most money, media time, or with the slickest speech or image. The last wedding I attended was celebrated in a 240-year-old church. It was a simple ceremony, yet elegant in substance, with the minister asking God's blessing on the couple and those in attendance joining in the invocation. Behind this church is a cemetery where lie those who have lived through every period in our nation's history, starting with the Revolutionary War. They have lived through or fought in wars, lived through good times and bad, and for the most part, they embodied the American spirit of freedom, optimism, and reward for hard work. For a few moments, as I thought about the young couple standing at the altar and of their loving friends and relatives, as well as the indomitable spirit of those who lie behind the church, I again have hope that our nation can regain its posture and become what it should be. Maybe we are not past the tipping point. Maybe we can again count on our elected officials to muster the courage to work together to lead us in the right direction. Maybe we can truly succeed once again. Maybe. And I feel that is a tone that a lot of people have taken, and that's why we've stuck with some of these corrupt, inefficient, I call them immoral, incompetent, non-trustworthy people that get elected in office term after term after term, because they have this machine that they've got in place, a re-election machine that's staffed, you know, whether it's the election year or not, they keep at least a skeleton staff on there that sends out timely donation request letters to people, and you know they have a story, a photo op of the elected politician, you know, kissing a baby at a parade or visiting a VFW hall or something. But those are expected gestures, in my opinion, that you always would pay attention to the veterans of our country. You would always look at a woman with a new little baby and tell the lady and maybe her husband's dad, oh, what a cute little baby. Even the baby is ugly. I mean, out of politeness, you do these kind of things. That should not be what we elect a person to do. You know, they should be a kind person. They should care about the people that fought in the wars and have been injured, like, for instance, the Disabled American Veterans Organization or the Veterans Hospital. This should be a given that every American, or in the case of somebody in another country, the same would stand true. In my opinion, I can't speak for another country, that we just honor each other. It's a normal way you should treat each other, with respect and dignity. You know, if somebody is old, of course you help them across the road. I didn't do anything noble or hero-like when the lady that had dementia would come onto my property to scare the daylights out of me. I was really concerned she was going to get hurt by something around my property and I not be there to see her, because I live on acreage. I'm not on some little postal, you know, postage stamp lot. So if she happened to wander out back and fall down or something, I mean, I'd never find her. You know, and neither would the guy. I mean, he'd be out there looking for, which he often did, her son. But the politicians have a system in place that, in a sense, the voting public has assumed the attitude that this writer did, that, we expect certain things, and he hopes that, that we can again be a great country. Hope is not going to get it. It's not going to fix what's broken to the extent that what's broken here is. It just isn't. We have a systemic failure at the government level, and yet we keep returning, voting these people back in, and the polling companies keep telling us, whether they're lying or telling the truth, or how they've manipulated the polling sampling. Because remember, when they do a poll, they don't go out and talk to you or everybody. It might say, well, there was 1,500 people polled. But how do you know who they polled? What zip code, postal code, did they call the people in? Because we know that birds of a feather flock together and live in communities. And what a person is thinking about and has at a priority in one part of town is quite a bit different than on the other side of town. So you can skew a poll by simply who you ask and what part of a town you're asking it in. You know, and it's just the whole system is nuts. And I'm going to give you a good example of just really screwy stuff. Oh, here where I live, we have thousands, and I'm not exaggerating, of square miles of desert around my town. The federal government controls 80% of the land in the state of Nevada, which is where I live. And so outside of the town boundaries is federal land. Well, we also happen to be the home of considered the sunniest, I guess you'd have to say, climate in the entire country. We get an inordinate amount of sunshine here. It's an odd day that it isn't a blue sky and sunny. I mean, it's a very odd day. And if you get a couple of them, you start wondering, God, it's cloudy out. Whereas where I came from in Seattle, it's diametric to this. It was cloudy all the time, and it was an inordinate day that you got sunshine. But anyway, so solar energy is a big thing here. And the state government legislature passed a law a few years ago that by the year 2030, which is only less than 8 years from now, 50% of the state's total energy consumption must be by renewable energy. And solar power is going to be the majority of that. Now, there are some other sources. Some wind, but wind is not altogether the most efficient way to get energy. And we also have geothermal, which again is not something it's not large scale, but we have some of that. So the vast majority is electricity produced by a solar panel. But you've got two ways of approaching solar panels. You could have rooftop-mounted solar panels, systems, which are individual systems. But the highest, most cost-worthy, highest efficiency, most cost-worthy way of doing solar is to have large, sections of land that's just covered with solar panels. And these are industry related. They are large corporations and investment companies that will come to the federal government here in Nevada and want to take over a whole section, a whole bunch of land, and then put a solar farm out. They call them solar farms. Well, if you're going to do a solar farm, where would you put the solar farm? Well, if you want to keep it away from your houses and people and, you don't want to look out and see miles of solar panels, you'd say, well, Nevada's a huge state. Why don't you put it over there? Over there, is a term used. Well, they don't want to do that because you've got to have transmission lines where your solar system's at. Now, in a community where you have rooftop solar panels, of course you could tie right into the grid that the local power company has. It might not, they might not own the grid, but that's the one that they're utilizing. And that's called a net metering program, which is what I'm on. I have my own solar system here that produces about 120% of what I need because I build it larger than what I really needed because I really didn't know. And so I produce power by all my power needs, and then I sell back to the utility of the amount that I don't use. That's called a net metering program, the one that I have here with my cooperative electric company. But these large companies want to come in and put these solar farms all up and down the major highway going between Las Vegas and my town, which is about 50 miles distant. There's transmission lines that come through here and go up north all the way up, like up to the Reno area that way. And it's a transmission line, and it's established. And they have the right-of-ways through all the Indian reservations and through the federal. But they've done all that at work. Well, they obviously want to follow this transmission line. Well, what also follows the transmission line are the highways, which is the highway that comes through my town. And so here, right outside major large housing developments on the south end of our town, this company is in the final stages of their plan to put thousands, I think 3,500, or maybe it's large, I don't have it in front of me. But anyway, it's a huge solar farm. And so you'd say, well, what are you bitching about? I mean, they're going to provide you with all the power. No, they're not. They're putting this solar panels farm in, but most of the power, 95% of it, is going to Southern California. It's not going to be used here. They're going to use a transmission line, a grid system, to move that power into California for use in California. So we're not really benefiting by them putting the solar system in here. And other than a skeleton crew of people that will be needed to maintain the system, there's not really going to be any jobs. It's not going to produce a lot of jobs. But what it is going to do is it's going to be put off limits, thousands of acres of land that the people here in this town have built up as a outdoor recreational mecca. People come here from all over to ride their desert buggies, dune buggies, and off-road vehicles out in the desert here. It's a major sport. If you live where a seaport is along the ocean, I shouldn't necessarily say a seaport. If you live where there's large bodies of water, then you have a tourist system industry and recreational industry built around boating and fishing and skiing and all that stuff. Well, here in the desert, it's around the land version of that. It's around dune buggies and these big quads and all of this stuff that are out there running around the desert. Well, that's going to be put off limits if the system gets approved. And the system has been underway for like 5 years, getting all the permits from the federal government, everything stored up. So why am I bringing this up? Well, our county commissioners, there's five county commissioners for our county. Four of them live in my town because we are the population center of the county. And one lives way up north. Our county is the second largest landmass county in the United States. I've mentioned this before on a show. It's 175 miles from my town to the county seat. And that isn't even the end of the county. It goes for, I mean, it's huge. But my point is that the representatives, the main representatives, of which three of those four here, are up for re-election next year. So what is this? How does this tie in? Well, why is it now, 5 years later, that this company that wants to put the solar panel system in has started having public meetings, telling the public, we've got this plan of putting this huge solar farm in. And when I say close to the town, I'm talking about the people will be able to look out their backyard and see solar panels. That's how close. And this has all been worked out with the Bureau of Land Management, of them taking over this land and the construction permits and everything being final. You know, everything is in a sense ready to go. And so about 3 months ago, suddenly we have a notice for public meetings about this. And the people here are in an uproar. They are protesting alongside the roads. They've got Facebook groups. They got everything. And so what does the county commissioners do? We're going to send a letter to the company telling them that we don't want it here. Where were they 5 years ago when this project was being proposed to the Bureau of Land Management? Hello? Where were these representatives of the three that are running for re-election? Now, granted, two of them, this is their first term, but they've been in office 3 years. And the other person, I think, this is her final term. She entered into last year, her ninth year of being a commissioner. Not a peep. There was never any notice to the public. Now, do you call this representation? So, the cat is out of the bag, you know, the people. But what is the chances now? Because remember I said the federal government controls this land. Not us, not the town I live in, and not the state of Nevada. Other than arguing over maybe an environmental concern or something, it's pretty late in the game because the company has already gotten the approvals from the Environmental Protection Agency over the land. You know, that they moved 1,100 or 1,300 desert tortoises, which are an endangered species. They killed off 300 of them by moving them, but they're already well into the process, and they're just now approaching the public. I'm sure that they knew that the public, this is one of those cases of not in my backyard. It'd be like if the company that wanted to put a stinky, smelly sewer plant in next door to your house, I didn't tell you about it until the bulldozer started running. But what are they doing? Oh, they're going to put a stinky, smelly sewer plant right next to your house. There goes your home values. There goes your lifestyle. There goes your desert views. You know, I mean, we've got a beautiful area here with the desert and the mountains and everything. And you don't think about it until tourists come through here and know about it. That's why they come here. But that's an example. Now, that's going on. And in the newspaper today, another town on the same route going north, 90 miles from here, actually 80 miles from here, they had their very first meeting with another company from the north of San Francisco that wants to do the same thing in that town. And so you look into it, you go, well, my God, there's proposals for a dozen of these solar farms going right up through our area where towns are at. And not a peep from any of the local governments about, or the state or anybody. You just find out about this stuff when they drop the ball in your lap and say, oh, you're going to be living with thousands of acres of solar panels. That's what you're going to be living with. Now, that is a case, in my opinion, of incompetent leadership. Now, when these people apply to be reelected, because next month in March is the filing period for running in the next election, shouldn't this be a major political point? But I can guarantee you these local elected officials were tap dance and skirt around
and very little of this will be discussed during the campaign. And the chances of them losing their election, not very good. These people get burrowed into these jobs. They get their political connections. They got the fundraising going on. And right along the highway, adjacent to where the transmission lines go, will be dozens upon dozens of these huge highway billboards with these, their smiling faces of these candidates on them. And you, there'll be a forest of lawn signs and street signs and stuff for these people running for office. But the people that want to lose the quality of life in their town, will they protest to keep these people from being reelected? That's going to be interesting. And I'm thinking of sending a letter to the editor about that very question. Not right now, but right after the March filing date is, hey, are you guys going to remember these people that are running for election about the solar panel situation? We don't have representation at the local levels of this country that I can see. Well, some people have it, the ones that can afford it. It's a pay-as-you-go program. But the average citizen living in a housing development gets stuck with all of this crap that the government lets pass by because it was obviously wasn't important to them. I just wonder, now that I'm talking about this here on the radio, did these politicians know about this ahead of time and simply didn't bring it up to the taxpayer? Maybe they knew about it. Maybe they, you know, maybe they took bribes. Maybe they didn't want the fight. There's a lot of maybes there that could be. But, you know, it's awful fishy that a project this size could come into your town and you don't even find out about it when it's already been underway for 5 years and nobody has spoke about it. So I'm not real happy about it, but there's not, you know, at this point, at my age, you know, I've kind of like swung my, you know, at the windmill about all I'm going to swing. Right now I talk about these issues. But as far as being an activist, my activist days are over. The young people need to be doing something about this. Okay, we'll be right back after the break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There was blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
The pill has been taken. The blinders are off. Are we in the end game? Or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened with no choices? Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com.
at revolution.radio. Check it out.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
I'm a little honey on the Lone Highway, left me for another on the Lone Highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the Lone Highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back here for the second hour of the show. And I'm continuing on here about government. You know, the government that we have here in our country are the examples I'm using. But this is a worldwide phenomena, the problem of the lack of proper representation and how this affects literally millions of people and countries. And one of the areas that is most prominent when it gets talked about is migration. But think about it. You see in the news, I know those in Europe and here in the United States, and I believe even countries like Russia and China have an issue with this, and that is people from another country or region of the world migrating to your region and your country, and putting on the back of the taxpayers and the infrastructure the need to now absorb millions of new people. And this all starts with policy. You know, sometimes it is a climate issue where you have, for instance, a drought that's gone on, and what was once a verdant land turns into a desert land, and your people can't feed themselves. Now, that's one cause of migration. There's another cause of migration called warfare, where literally the country has disintegrated down to a point where it's unsafe to live there. You have a good chance of being raped, pillaged, murdered, you know, all sorts of things happen, and it affects the economy and their jobs, and so people move for that reason. So basically, migration, for the most part, is a government-forced migration. And yet we blame the migrants for the situation they're in. And I want you to think of this for a second. I'm not pro people breaking into my country. And I spoke out against this in the past. And I believe you should be a citizen and follow through proper roadmap to citizenship that each country has established. But I can understand on a personal level why a person would take that action, that drastic action you could say, well, that God, look at that mother. She's dragging that baby across the desert, you know, and, you know, all the problems associated with that and how dangerous it is. Well, yeah, why would a person put their baby and young children in such a dire situation? They're not morons. It's because of the desperation they have for getting out of where they were at and getting someplace where they've at least heard that it's more civil and there's more of a chance to raise their children. How many people living in where you're at right now, listeners, you know, that would just pack up, move away from family, from, I mentioned a cemetery and, at the wedding in the last half hour that the people out back was graves there that were 240 years old graves there. The people literally leaving their ancestral homeland and coming to where you're at. And they don't have any friends. They might have some other relatives that are around, spread out across the land, but they literally have to start over again. Then what happens to the people in the state that has this open border policy? The people that have been in the state, in our country, for a long time. And I'm going to get a good example being the state of California. So when you have government policy that has an open border policy, as the federal government, the United States does at this time, and then you have a state like California that just welcomes hordes of people because they're looking for cheap labor, of cheap farm labor. They don't want to pay a living wage. And just in general, cheap labor. And the cost of moving the people there and the burden of putting up with them, the state believes, and the large businesses believe, well, we can just put that back on the backs of the taxpayer. They'll go ahead and foot the bill for feeding, housing, clothing, educating, health care needs, and so forth, of the integration of these people that we invite in that are not even supposed to be here through this route. So on the one hand, you got the argument of, well, they shouldn't have come in illegally to begin with. Then you got the realization, well, yeah, but if you were in their position, you would come in too. And then if you've got government policy that says not only come in, but we're going to give you, in a sense, a golden opportunity of free this, free that, free this. California in particular is a broken, it is the epitome, and the state of Illinois, I'll get into that after I've talked about California, of a incompetent, far left wing, socialistic government that has ruined the state. The Californians are moving out of California record numbers. The state population has dropped, and they're moving to places like Texas. I mentioned, I think, in the last week's show, there's no moving vans available for rent, for reservations, what have you, between the state of Texas and California. They're all taken up because people are leaving California, but what they see is a more fair and balanced society. This week, this is an example of what I say is, well, this should be my idiot of the week story. I'm just going to label the entire state government of California my idiot of the week story. This week, California's legislative Democrats revived their single-payer health care plan, which will essentially eliminate private health insurance in the state to create a government-run program that promises access to any doctor, regardless of network, and a wide variety of medical services, as reported by the Los Angeles Times newspaper. The plan would cover those also who are in the country illegally. Now, what does that represent? Well, there's over 3 million that we know of illegal immigrants in California living there. Over 3 million. That's more people than in some states that are living in California. You say, well, God, you know, healthcare is a decent way to go. You know, I mean, people should be able to have healthcare. What? We do have healthcare, but we don't have a single payer program. Now, this is why we don't have a single payer program, what I'm going to talk about next. Socialized medicine has long been a goal of the progressives running for the Golden State offices. That fiscal reality has proved a tall hurdle. A proposal, now this proposal I just mentioned, it first died in 2017 because it would run taxpayers $400 billion a year. And other socialist-leaning Democrat-controlled states have run up against similar concerns. There's no free lunch. In 2014, Vermont was forced to abandon its effort at government-run care after being made clear that the cost would necessitate punitive taxes on individuals and businesses. Colorado voters overwhelmingly, 79-21 polling, rejected a similar plan in 2016, in part due to the astronomical cost estimate. No, that was a vote. That wasn't a poll. That was a vote. 79-21. 79% against 21-4. And you can guess who the 21-4 were. They're the socialists. But Governor Gavin Newsom and California lawmakers who are now sitting on billions of dollars in federal virus stimulus money that they hope to direct to the single-payer scheme. Was this the intent of the virus money? Well, it doesn't make any difference because that's what he wants to do with it. And once the seed money evaporates, they've got a plan to tax everything that moves to cover the astronomical financial commitment such a government takeover will require. The Times reported that the funding mechanism includes a constitutional amendment imposing a new excise tax on businesses equal to 2.3% of any annual gross receipts in excess of $2 million. Not net receipts, gross receipts. And I can tell you right now, a lot of businesses, the gross is you could have $100 gross and only have a profit of $2. They don't care. They want to tax you at 2.3%. You might be losing money by paying the tax. Okay. Then there's a new payroll tax of 1.25% on the annual wages of California businesses with at least 50 employees. And that would include an additional levy on jobs that pay more than $50,000 annually. Do you think you can get a wage increase in these times of Biden inflation if the employer knew, well, I'm already paying $45,000. If I go over 50, I also have this new punitive tax I've got to pay. And that's only the beginning. Free health care, after all, doesn't come cheap. All but the lowest earning Californians would also be required to pay more in taxes. Personal income taxes would increase for those earning $150,000 a year, and the state would impose a new surcharge on certain high earners while raising the state's top marginal rate on wage income to a whopping 18.5%. So they would have a state income tax of 18.5% on top of your federal income tax. And then you'd have these additional taxes that would be paid. No doubt some Californians are eager to allow the government to make their personal health care choices. But many others likely are not so enamored of the prospect, nor of the massive taxes they'll be forced to endure. And then it goes on and closes the article. It says, watch for some of the later, along with beleaguered business owners, to ramp up their exodus from the progressive paradigm. So we have a progressive paradise in California that has wide open borders, have 3 million plus illegal people there that are from other countries, and they want to expose the taxpayers in California to even more socialized programs because the federal government sent them, you know what, they want to fund this, start it off with the billions of dollars that the American taxpayers sent the state of California because of, the mitigation for the virus. This has nothing to do with the virus. This has everything to do with an effort to socialize medicine. Now, when you start looking at what it costs to do this, when you tell people you can have, well, you get treated everywhere, you know, everything's covered, you know, anybody can get covered, don't make any difference where you're from. Heck, if you needed an open heart surgery, you'd wander into the country from somewhere else. If you had a surgery that was going to cost $150,000, why wouldn't you just illegally migrate to California? They're not going to do anything about you illegally migrating, and plus the taxpayers would pick up the bill for your surgery. This is the kind of nut programs they got to. Now let's take a look at an editorial on Illinois, state of Illinois. It says another cautionary tale about big government. Remember, these are elected officials. That's kind of the theme of what I've been talking about. You people out there, if you're listening to me from Illinois, elect these people. You people from California, elect those people to represent you. California isn't the only progressive paradise that's experiencing a population exodus. The blue fiscal basket case, known as Illinois, is in even worse shape. And you know, when the exoduses take place, it's people that are educated, have businesses, have property, have high income, have living wage incomes and so forth. They're the ones that are smart enough to look around and say, I'm getting out of here. You know, I've been here for six generations, my family, but I am bailing out. I am what? I'm migrating, see the migration word I talked about, to another state. I've been forced out of my ancestral back homeland because of ridiculous government. So it says here, baby boomers love Illinois. Long wooed by the promise of generous public pension benefits, boomers, that's my age group, have largely stayed put in Illinois, helping to raise the state's median age by more than 2 years over the past decade. But young adults don't quite share boomers' love for the land of Lincoln. Faced with the cold shower of the state's overregulation, high taxes, and generational legacy debt, more and more millennials and other younger Illinois have been hitting the road. According to a new study by the University of Illinois Extension, this out-migration of young folks has led Illinois to become one of the three states, along with West Virginia and Mississippi, to see a drop in its overall population since 2010. California is another one. They didn't even mention them. They've had a drop in their population. As the Wall Street Journal outlined recently, this mass exodus is largely driven by students who leave Illinois for college and never return. And it's not hard to figure out why they decide to stay away. For starters, the state's residential tax rate is the second highest in the nation, second only to New Jersey. Its corporate tax rate is among the highest in the nation. These high taxes have stifled growth and sending jobs, as well as the young people seeking them out of state. Illinois is also seeing a mass exodus of children. The University of Illinois study found that the state's underperforming schools, long at the mercy of big labor, could be a key factor in driving away young families. the state's under 18 population has declined by 350,000 people over the past decade, putting Illinois on a similar fiscal path to the number one bankrupted Puerto Rico. Illinois has long been run by powerful Democrats in service of government unions, and the debt that they run up alone is four times more than the national average, and the second highest in the nation after Connecticut. As the Illinois Policy Institute aptly suggests, state lawmakers owe it to millennials and future generations to get their state's massive generational inequity under control. Illinois, much like California, should be a cautionary tale for growth states such as Nevada, where I live. If you want to remain and attract young people, it makes sense to rein in public pension expenses and to decrease the cost of doing business while removing regulatory barriers that stifle entrepreneurs. If you continue to kick the can down the road, these issues will lead only to young folks following the can right out of the state. So that's all I want to talk about that right there. But it's an amazing situation that government has led us to. Again, we're in an election. I can't even tell you how many emails I get for people wanting to run for, you know, come to my fundraiser, come to this, come to that. You know, I'm boycotting it. I'm not going to any of them. A common theme at the old farts breakfast that I attend on Wednesday morning is that we are all glad that we are at the other end of the life cycle. And that's a sad thing to say, but I am. I find it comforting that while the rest of the country is going to have to deal with this mess, I'm not even going to be dealing with it. I'm going to be in a space out behind that church somewhere, buried 6 feet under. I might even request to be buried 15 feet under, so there's absolutely no way I could be resurrected as a zombie into such a screwed up place. I've got time for a couple more stories here, and this is one that's really bad. Whoopi Goldberg. First time I ever heard of Whoopi Goldberg, she played in a movie it was a comedy, and I liked it. I can actually honestly say that I liked her comedy routines and so forth. Now I know a lot of other people must share the same belief that I did. I thought Whoopi Goldberg's dad was a member of the Jewish race. Jew. I just said Jewish race, right? Because Jews are a race. They are an individual race established by God and always have been. So I thought, well, if Whoopi Goldberg is a Jew, she would certainly know that the Jewish people are a race. And she doesn't know that, evidently. Now, I looked it up, because I wanted to find out, you know, because what's going on? Whoopi Goldberg sort of sits in the queen's seat on a TV program called The View here in the United States. And it's a bunch of liberal women. Generally, they have, if they can con somebody into it, a token conservative woman that sits around in a panel around the table drinking cups of coffee. And they have guests come on and so forth. But it's an entire far left socialist love fest, you know, with, you know, rainbow flags, pro, you know, transsexual, pro queer, pro all of this stuff, which to me is moral and against my religious beliefs. But if you guys feel differently, that's up to you. But that's what my take on it. But so I wouldn't watch a program like that. But Whoopi Goldberg is a proponent of, and it's clear from what she said the other day, that she's a racist. She's all for this woke stupid movement. She's a Black Lives Matters movement advocate. She loves the critical race theory. And I doubt there is much truth at all in her action, in her life when it comes down to it. She would lie, cheat, and steal to push those political agenda items right there. I mean, it's sad to say that about another human being, but that woman comes out on The View the other day, and she said that the Holocaust that killed millions of Jewish people wasn't about race. It was about white on white. She said that the Jews, because they're white skin, in a sense, that means that they are just whiteys killing whiteys. Hitler killing whiteys. When Hitler even came out and called them a race, a despicable race that needed to be eliminated, stuffed out. And she tried building this whole scheme in the show the other day around this, and nobody was buying it. Nobody has been buying it. And so the woman has been suspended from The View. Now, if this was a conservative woman, she would have been fired from The View. But instead, the ABC decided to suspend her for 2 weeks. But this is, she's created a real hornet's nest for her. But she's gone from in my mind, I thought she was a Jew, to evidently she lied about that. She just created the whole Jewish theme about herself. This is the craziness about this woman. And, you know, The View and the lefties that want to watch that show, I guess they're welcome to watch the show. You know, she could join another lefty idiot that's in the news this week. You know, Mark Zuckerberg with his Facebook, and he managed to manage the company to lose $251 billion in value this week while losing $30 billion of his own wealth because of mismanaging his social network empire. An empire that started off when evidently he stole the business idea from some other guys in college. But that's about all I got. Now, this is crazy, a crazy show. But you're going to be inundated with voting pamphlets and ads and emails and letters and everything. You got to get down, listeners, and start asking the tough questions of these people running it. Remember, a national politician gets their start at the local level. You want to snuff them out when the cockroaches are still low in number and they're young. You don't have to fight back. Okay, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan Baker. Welcome to the Crypt.
You going back in?
Still men out there. God. When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. Freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
pillow's been taken. The blinders are off. Are we in the endgame? Or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened, with no choices? Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Check it out.
Executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of...